Hello and welcome to PMI's podcast, Leading for Business Excellence. In this episode, I'm joined by David Callahan, former Senior Vice President of Oracle EMEA and President of the BQF until 2019. David describes his career in IT as a happy accident, but it's quite clear that he's absolutely thrived in the world of technology and enjoyed being part of IT's evolution over the last four decades. He talks with passion about being a leader, the need to listen, learn and improve, to create teams who challenge you as a leader, and how from that challenge, greater results can be achieved. Do listen out for his thoughts on the importance of developing connections between business and the local community, and how the benefits of that work really are two-way. I'm Susanna Clark, Managing Partner of PMI, the performance improvement consulting and training firm. Our Leading for Business Excellence podcast brings inspiring stories from across the globe and a multitude of sectors, talking with great leaders who share their experience and what business excellence means to them. I do hope you enjoy this conversation with David as much as I did. Hi, David. Welcome to Leading for Business Excellence, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
I'm very interested in your career, which has obviously spanned many different areas. I wondered if you'd like to just give us a brief introduction to yourself.
Certainly. So about four decades ago, I left Newcastle University with a degree in maths and computing to become a software engineer, which in those days was a very new kind of job title. And I started out as a programmer for CAD/CAM, computer-aided design, computer-aided manufacturing, which again at that time was very innovative, and so got the engineering background there. But perhaps like many engineers, rapidly moved into pre-sales, getting closer to customers and the customer experience of them using the product, and then from there into sales, and where I've really been for 35 years, and in sales management roles with a number of companies, but principally Digital Equipment as one, KPMG Consulting, and then 17 years with Oracle. For the last 3 years, I've been doing board advisory roles for a number of companies. Now, alongside that, there's been some interesting opportunities to do some non-executive work and some not-for-profit work. And so the kind of roles I've really enjoyed there, I was on the board of Intellect, which is effectively the trade association for IT, now called Tech UK. I was with them for a number of years, 3 years as president. I've been president of the British Quality Foundation, which really looks to promote individual and organizational excellence. I was there for 11 years, and then various other roles on CBI groups and committees, and an organization called eSkills, which is, again, a very interesting one, promoting digital skills through all the ages and age groups. And so just a variety of opportunities to be involved and learn and contribute.
And you know, it's interesting that you're still very involved in digital skills, and obviously that's where your career started. But as you say, four decades ago, that was a very new field. And I'm particularly interested because CAD/CAM was particularly new. So what was it that got you on that path at university?
It's a great question. And I think it was probably a happy accident. I was lucky enough to be involved linking up in those days a telephone onto a modem to a computer miles and miles away and hear it click away. And it was fascinating. And I think my mother would rather I was an accountant or something. But this new technology field seemed particularly interesting. And so did that. And when I left university, I was fortunate enough to get a job with a company called Rakel Redak, who did CAD/CAM. And what was fascinating about that in those days, it was graphical computing. And it was color graphics. And that was incredibly exciting because in those days, everything was black and white, mainly text, and just moving into more of a graphic sense. So perhaps it was the appeal of almost feeling a bit like a pioneer. I'm not quite sure it was quite that close, but it certainly was a great voyage to start on, but very much a happy accident. And I think, Susanna, what I've found since is the innovations continued.
Yes.
It never stops. You know, how lucky have I been to be in IT for 40 years through all the transitions and changes coming into things like internet and everything that has offered us. It's been a fantastic and fascinating and rewarding place to be. So, yeah, I'm very grateful for the happy accident.
Sounds good. And you said yourself that you started off in that much more an engineering role and then moved towards sales. That's quite a shift change, isn't it? Because, you know, tend to think of engineers almost with their heads under blankets in a very dark room. That's absolutely not what you want from a salesperson. So can you tell me a bit about what made you want to make that transition?
Again, I think it was just fate and fortune. And when I started, yes, as an engineer, you really admire the practitioners, and all my heroes, if you like, were the practitioners and people who were particularly good at software engineering. But again, at that time, when you'd created software, you couldn't download it. You couldn't connect to the internet and install. You had to go out with a disk under your arm to install it. And I was fortunate enough to go on a number of installation trips, actually mainly overseas. I was doing Northern Europe installation, so you'd get the big disk. You know, you had to get a license for it in those days to be able to travel, but then spend a number of days on a customer site installing your software and checking that it worked. And that way, I started to get a lot of visibility to the customers, the environments, what they were looking for, what constituted quality in their terms, what really met the expectations that they actually had. And actually, the more I found myself working with customers, frankly, the more I liked them. It's this constant opportunity to see what you were doing, go into a different environment and start to achieve a result and learn some more. So, yeah, I would imagine if I wasn't going out and doing the installations and had been, if you like, back at base under the blanket doing lots of the core coding, life could have been very, very different.
Yes, and that is a very unusual experience, isn't it? That, and I can see how the need for that, as you describe, because actually often IT departments are quite removed from the customer.
They can be. And maybe, actually, just reflecting on that now, you know, this whole world of you download and install at the touch of a button and never, if you like, have that intimacy. The intimacy comes later. Somebody may send you a survey.
Yes.
How do you rate our software? 5 stars. Well, you know, that's one way of doing it. But this, frankly, as an engineer, there's nothing quite like being on site and somebody giving you immediate feedback as to whether your software, your product, is really meeting the requirements that they have. There's a certain immediacy there which gets the attention.
And I love that idea of, you know, you talk about intimacy and immediacy. And I'm interested because obviously, you know, we talk a lot about quality, you know, business excellence. So in that role that you had going out and visiting customers, what was the onus on you to feed back what you learned about the customer to your leadership back at base?
Incredible! Because you know it was a substantial system, a CAD/CAM system. People were designing significant pieces of equipment. They were designing cranes. They were designing power stations. And the particular CAD/CAM that I was working on was mainly for electrical, so big electrical circuits. And you know, frankly, those have got to work. And so there were large contracts, and there was always the desire when I got back from my trip to understand, right, how had that gone? What worked well? Were there any things that we needed to think of for the future? Because you know, technology doesn't, as we know, it doesn't stand still. It will constantly evolve. And while we can think as engineers and designers of software, we're going to have the best ideas, actually, the customers have some pretty good ones as well.
Yes.
And they will give a lot of feedback to say, it would have been really good if we could have that. Or in the future, could you look at that? And so, yes, there was a lot of interest in getting a first-hand view, which I was lucky to get. And if you like, at a very honest, transparent level, there was kind of no commercial agenda in it. It would often be two practitioners, technicians, talking together about a product. And that gives you an opportunity to explore some new avenues and new potential.
Yes, that sounds so interesting. And I like that idea that it was with practitioners in particular. And again, and that it was a conversation.
Absolutely was. And for me, it was the start of a learning of dealing with different cultures. Because, you know, a conversation with somebody from a different place, actually, you've got to tune into it. And it can take a little while. But that, again, that was all part of the fun.
So you've moved into sales. At what point did you start to move into more, you know, management leadership positions, David?
Really quite quickly. I'd probably only been selling for a year or so, and my move to sales was prompted by the fact that the salesmen all got very nice cars. And sorry if that sounds very shallow. but you know, as a 20-something-year-old,
you were young, David. You were young.
I was young. I was young, easily impressionable, and so moved into sales. And I think because I'd come from a very strong product background, I could relate very quickly in a technical world to those customers, and I'd got some commercial rough edges to knock off. But I was working with some really great people. Who were pretty quick in knocking those off, and then went on actually, therefore, relatively quickly into sales management, and you know, that's been an endlessly fascinating journey as well.
So you've been leading sales, you know, for most of the rest of your career, then.
Yeah, and thinking about it, probably for about 35 years.
And what would you say is the art of being a good leader in that sales environment?
The art. I think the thing about sales is it's actually an art and a science. From my experience, there is a science of selling in terms of understanding the ratios that one needs to build in terms of building a pipeline and then creating those prospects, and from that getting the potential qualified into maybe demonstrations and quotations, present it, all those kind of things. There is a science to it, but then there's definitely an art to it as well. The ability to empathize with people, to understand, to listen, to respond, to challenge in a very constructive way, and sometimes to be able to go both sides of the table, and to have a mixture of styles. So I think there are a number of things that contribute to a successful sales career, but probably listening is right up there.
And from my experience, you know, most companies, you need some form of sales or channel or, you know, whatever mechanism you've chosen in order to get yourself to market. But one of the challenges is that the salespeople can often be seen as the naughty children. They're the people that you have to put up with, but actually they cause challenges within the organization. And it becomes very easy to, you know, if that person hadn't sold that, and if it wasn't sales, we'd all be fine, even though it's core, obviously, to success. How did you find that, coping with that?
And again, I can relate to that, and I can understand that. But I think it's driven from a good place, that the salespeople have goals to achieve, and while at sometimes it can appear that they can be single-minded to the point of being maybe destructive rather than constructive, I think it is absolutely possible to harness the energy that they have, and to really make sure that you know that they are going in a direction which is, yes, going to get the desired result, but frankly, nobody wants to be picking up pieces afterwards. You know, I've had salespeople who can knock any door down, which is kind of good until you realize you need another 15 people to pick up all the pieces afterwards. And so it's actually creating that understanding that sales is only successful when it's sustainable. And that you can keep going back and working with the same customers, developing those clients, developing the services, the opportunities. So sales is not a one-off hit and run. You know, it is. It in my experience, when it works well, it's really built to be sustainable on the back of the relationships that make the whole world work, and a degree of collaboration, I think.
Yes, and I think, you know, your point earlier about leadership is about listening. I think sales is similar, isn't it? It's about listening to your customer.
It is. And again, it doesn't always have to be, how can I put it, a a cozy and comfortable environment and conversation. And I think one of the things I learned very, very early, and one of perhaps my formative experiences, I've been a sales manager for some time and just had joined a new team with a great team that was revered almost, you know, and people I admired and respected with a very charismatic and capable leader. And I went to my first meeting and was very excited about it. I thought, that's great. I'm going to learn a tremendous amount here. And it was like a bear pit. I remember thinking, what's happening here? And afterwards, I remember the sales leader came up to me, and I can't remember whether it was physically or metaphorically put his arm around me. And he said, David, you weren't comfortable with that, were you? And I said, no. There was a lot of conflict there. And he said, yeah, but actually, he said, it's out of the heat, the diamonds come. And that was a very, for me, profound learning, that by having the heat, by having the robust debate, actually you got a better than average answer. That if it was just an average conversation, you are likely to get an average outcome. If everybody agreed, you probably hadn't moved forward from when you all entered the room. And for me, that was a fantastic learning, to be able to have that debate. And I think there are a couple of things I took away from that. One is, people need to be listened to. They absolutely need to be listened to. But then they do need a decision as well.
Yes.
Because the debate cannot be endless. There has to be a decision that goes with that debate. And I found that with that team, and perhaps what made them so strong, was the debate could be fierce. But once the decision was made, it was total collaboration to make it work.
How interesting.
There was none of that leave the meeting and have a bit of backbiting. No, that didn't go. I'm going to have another run at this. It was, okay, I've had my chance. I've had my say. A decision's been taken. I will absolutely be constructive and collaborative and work with that. And so that became a strong learning for me, that collaboration, as much as decisiveness, is part of leadership. And the other one that I've always remembered, because his other saying was, out of the heat, the diamonds come. The other one was, you need grit in the oyster, which I always liked as well. And that was to have different people on your team. Never have a team of mini-me's, because everybody will be in violent agreements all the time. And so, yeah, I've always tried to have somebody, maybe one or two or three, who actually I know will cause a bit of discomfort,
yes,
but from a good place, and it's always worked. Those people have made the team a better team. So, sales is an interesting place, and the characters within it are endlessly fascinating. But again, I've learned a lot from all of them.
Yes, and I love that idea of collaboration, and that you know, you choosing to select some characters who would stand up and challenge you. Because I think sometimes as a leader, it can be a lonely job, can't it? And or it can lead to some degree of tunnel vision, that you become focused and you stop hearing the voices around you. So because they're either not being listened to or they're not brave enough to stand up. So
yeah,
creating that environment where actually it necessitates, because there are people there who will stand up and say, actually, I think there are some things we want to talk about as to really why we should do this or why we shouldn't do that. Very healthy. Yeah.
No, you're absolutely right, because I certainly don't. I suspect very few people have the gift of being absolutely right every time.
I know, I do. I try, and, David.
I try. But actually, I know I fail. And if you surround yourself with good people and constructive, robust debate, then actually you will find a better answer. I'm saying a better answer rather than a right answer, because I think, you know, often there's this quest to find the right answer. And in business, perhaps as in life, there's not always the right answer there, but it's finding the best. What is the best we can do in the situation in which we find ourselves? And I think that's why I kind of went on to be involved with the British Quality Foundation, because it was very much around being the best you can be. Because I can't understand why anybody would want to be anything else.
Yes.
And being the best you can be actually requires other people. You can't be the best in isolation, as something I found.
You mentioned that actually quite early in your career, and I know obviously certainly in your time in Oracle, you were frequently involved or working overseas, looking after regions, not just the UK. What's your observations, learning from leading those different cultures of how you do that effectively?
It's back to listening and collaboration. And I think probably my most rapid learning experiences have been when I've been overseas working with other cultures and other cultures. You don't have to be in a different continent.
True. Yeah.
You actually don't have to travel that far to realize that people have a different slant on things and have a different way of articulating things and have a different way of reaching an agreement and have a different way of demonstrating their disapproval. And one has to learn to tune into that. And therefore, I think there has to be a certain intensity and rapidity to that because, frankly, if you keep on missing the signals, misunderstandings will inevitably happen. And as we see, is the way of the world between different peoples, and business and commerce is no different. And so I think I did learn to tune into people and to listen to people and learn from those people. And I would always invite feedback from certainly those early formative experiences from my colleagues in those countries and from customers and the partners, just to make sure that I was perhaps getting the message over that I needed to, but also hearing the messages that I needed to. And I think perhaps that's another thing I've learnt. It's always worth doing the checks and balances.
Yes.
Don't ever leave with an assumption, because we all understand what assumption is, and it's always worth doing a check and balance just to make sure that your understanding is right.
So over the course of your leadership, whether it's been through your career or really since you've moved into much more of a portfolio career, what would you say the most challenging situation you've come across as a leader has been?
Oh, I think every day is a challenge as a leader, and I know that sounds trite, but there is a degree of truth in it.
And I understand. Yes, I understand what you mean.
Either with customer situations or suppliers or partners or colleagues, there's always some challenge. I think probably a time I remember as being a particular challenge, which has probably paled into significance compared to where we are with the pandemic. But at the time, certainly felt an order of magnitude challenge greater than I'd faced before, was the financial crisis. As we were going into the financial crisis, I think there was a lot of fear around. There was individual fear, organizational fear, societal fear, but nobody quite knew what the outcome would be. And I was leading the UK organization at the time. And so there are all kinds of challenges coming up as part of that environment. And I think what I saw happening was, because it became difficult to plan, perhaps a bit like now with the pandemic.
A bit like now, yeah, very much so.
People became very transactional. And the problem with a transaction is there can be winners and losers around a situation, a commercial agreement or an issue regarding a product. And things became very transactional. And my response to that was to put in, at the time, something that had been perhaps left fallow for a number of years, was to put in an executive sponsorship program, which was to introduce into the customer situations, an experienced individual who'd been with the company some time, who understood the breadth of what we offered, but also had the maturity to really engage with the customer, understand the context of their business, listen to them, but had no agenda. They weren't carrying a commercial goal for A, B, or C. Their goal was to make sure that the customer was happy and was getting the level of response they needed from an organization that was really quite significant to them. And that reaped really great rewards because, and it's back to that, people knew they'd been listened to. And there was never, perhaps, you know, then a magic dust that the situation went away, but everybody felt they'd had their say. And when the decision was made, it could be done in a way that was felt to be constructive and a very constructive outcome. So I think that was a time I remember being particularly challenging, but the challenges were really quite diverse from the directions that they came from.
Yes, and it's interesting, isn't it? Because I know with customers that I talk to now, you know, out of the challenges come great innovation. And sometimes you turn around and think, why didn't we do that sooner?
they do. And yeah, I think one of the things I found, and it was about that time I started getting involved with the British Quality Foundation. And I've always been, very impressed by Lean Six Sigma and all the quality terms that go around. And I tried to think, how can I distill this into something that I feel comfortable with in terms of articulating? And it was assess, learn, improve, share. But almost as simple as that. That was my quality pro. And it's exactly as you say, you assess and learn. And as you do that with that challenge, there's the opportunity to improve. And having improved, guess what? You can share it. And then everybody gets the benefit of it. And I think, you know, it's just so simple for four words applied to any kind of environment, situation, organization, individual, can actually give a lot of benefit, a lot of return.
Yes. And the sharing, of course, you know, it's that, you know, what did we learn? And then how are we going to share what we've learnt with people in order to grow and to continuously improve in what we do?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the other one that the other word that I kind of add occasionally is celebrate.
Yes.
Because actually, you know, often any improvement can be hard, and one needs to recognize, reward, and celebrate that at times. And so depending on the situation, celebrate can come in there as being, yeah, I think this is one of those where we have actually got to take some time and say, good job.
Yes, yes. And there's that reward for that team as well. But there is also that creating motivation elsewhere in the organisation.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. Because I think people need ambition. People need beacons to be able to look at and say, yeah, hey, that's what good feels like. That's what good looks like. I want a part of that. And I think one of the things we found with the British Quality Foundation is the awards process. Yes, you are absolutely recognizing and celebrating the achievements of the individuals and companies. But what happens is everybody else says, I want the award. I want that because that looks great.
I know that you've always felt quite passionate about connecting business with the local community. And I just wondered if you could just tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, I think it's come from a number of directions, Susanna, and I think it became, the significance of it became when I really joined Intellect, which now Tech UK, which was the trade association. From that, and there were hundreds of companies of all sizes, IT companies, were part of that. And one really gets the sense of power of IT, and as in, I guess many, many different professions, but particularly with IT, to be an agent for improvement, for an agent for inclusivity, but you also understand it can be an agent for isolation as well, because not everybody can engage with it, and therefore getting out into the community. In order to help people improve or feel included was very important, but also to prevent the isolation. And at Oracle, like many, many companies, we had what we call volunteer days, where people had the opportunity to go out and volunteer their expertise. And I think in the early days, we were a bit naive. You know, our contribution could be going and painting a school.
Yes.
Yeah, and again, there is value in that, but we weren't the world's greatest painters. You know, other people probably could have done a better job. Where we were skilled was in IT, And therefore, taking those skills out on a voluntary basis into the community to coach and mentor within schools or within businesses, I think proved to be of far more value and far more value to those receiving, but also to those giving, because it was a real learning experience in terms of engaging with different types of people in different situations. And I think one of the things I've been thrilled to see in lots of organizations subsequently, and it's not something that I was ever involved with, has been those technology companies that have gone out, particularly now, to the elderly, to help the elderly understand, oh, okay, this is an iPad. How do I do FaceTime? How can I see that person that I can no longer be with? I think that's been fantastic. And so I think it is this thing about technology, tremendous power for good, but it can be isolating. And the more that those of us involved in it can be out there to leverage the good and to address perhaps the items that, or the elements that present some kind of challenge.
And you're completely right about the it being rewarding for those who are in, who are the person going out and doing that. You know, I've shared with you when I was at Oracle, having the opportunity to go to a secondary school in Reading and talk to sixth formers about what a future in IT might look like and the breadth of opportunity. And I came home from that, you know, on cloud nine, buzzing. Yeah. I had a great set of conversations with some really interesting 16 and 17 year olds, and it was incredibly rewarding.
Yeah, I remember a similar one. We were, I think, involved sponsoring and mentoring the Prince's Trust, and I attended a series of presentations from young people that blew me away. You know, the passion they had, the passion they'd acquired for what technology could do and how they could see it shaping the future was just incredible. And you know, one gets, you feel A, proud, but B, humble. Yes, because you think, why weren't we doing this earlier? Yes. You know, this benefit could have been accruing for so much longer. Some many happy memories of those times.
We've talked a lot about customers, and I'm interested in your experience as being a customer. Standout experience that you've had, either from a quality or a customer experience perspective?
Well, I'll give you one from perhaps just a week or two ago. This was nothing corporate or business related. It was a piece of work needed doing on my house. Mm-hmm. And forgive me, it's as simple as, you know, my inquiry was responded to exceedingly quickly and knowledgeably. The person who came out to assess, you know, very engaging, listened. Oh, no, actually, firstly, arrived bang on time, yes. Equipped with everything, was knowledgeable, put the quote in the same day, has subsequently done the work, and it is absolutely outstanding, to the point where there is actually no feedback I could have given him to improve. And it's looking at the whole that's even to the point of, yes, being on time. And we know not everyone can always be on time, but you can call ahead. I think the other thing was that, I don't know about you, but often when you have work done on your house, the work they do is very good, but they can destroy what somebody else has done. If you understand me, you know, the painter will do a great job, but the painter may, paint over something that no longer works. Yeah, there can be something like that. This guy respected everybody's work, not just their own, and maybe that's part of it as well. Somebody that respects all the players within an environment in which they're working. So maybe you were looking for something a little bit more substantial, but that it did actually strike me at the time as being, you know, exceptional quality.
I can't agree more. I mean, I just think that if you sat down and you know, with that supplier and dissected all of the steps that had to be gone through in order to achieve that great outcome for you. This is no small feat, no matter what the size of company.
No, you are, again, absolutely right, because they had to send away for some parts and that were non-trivial and materials that were non-trivial. And again, as we understand at the moment, in a pandemic, actually getting the parts and the materials can be kind of hard. But bang on time and quality, he completed the job. So on that one, I was very happy.
Excellent. So I have a last question for you, David, which is, if reincarnation was an option for you, which leader would you come back as and why?
Susanna, I thought this would be your desert island question. because I had kind of been forewarned by a previous speaker, and therefore I've given it some thought, and it's really hard. It is really hard, and I think part of the reason it's hard is that most leaders nowadays, we're familiar with their flaws as we are with their qualities. You know, a good leader in conflict is not always a good leader in peace. A good leader in social justice is not always suited to economic prosperity. And so you kind of have this on the one hand and on the other. So I started thinking down a track, and you may count me out here and say, no, there's got to be another answer to this, but I'm not sure what it would be. But I started to think of how many leaders would be proud of their legacy. And I'm not sure, actually. You know, even looking back in history, some of the great names we'd automatically think of, how much of their legacy has really retained? And so I came up with two. The first one, I'll pass over because I don't know enough about him. But Sun Tzu, who wrote The Art of War, which is a little book I kind of like, and clearly a long time ago. And being a general, a war general, there were probably some things that he had to do that were a little more unsavory. But he wrote a very good book, and I love lots of his quotes.
I love and poems.
And clearly a remarkable individual, that what he wrote thousands of years ago is still credible currency. Yes. And a legacy. My favourite one of his is opportunities multiply as they are seized. And that's a great one for a sales guy. Opportunities multiply. So he's kind of in the mix. But the one I kind of alighted on was Nobel, as in the Nobel Prizes. Mm-hmm. And clearly he was a leader, a business leader in his lifetime. But I think not only did he create those things around success and something sustainable year after year after year for stakeholders. And actually, his ambition, his stakeholder is humanity. That's a pretty, pretty big stakeholder. You know, that is a legacy. And I think another thing about good leaders is they mobilize to a vision. People will mobilize to that vision. And what he achieved after his death, so that's why this reincarnation thing may not quite work. Would I reincarnate as a dead person? Actually, is profoundly impressive that he's left a legacy that will continue to drive success for humanity and recognize excellence. And there's probably not that many who kind of fall into that kind of bracket. So I'm not sure whether you'll allow that one, but that's what I've come up with.
I completely allow that one. And I think that, firstly, it's something that it wouldn't have occurred to me. But I absolutely, that sense of legacy that continues to be current and relevant and, reaching out to stretch for excellence, I think is, yes.
Yeah, and that's it, isn't it? That, you know, a Nobel Prize is not a trivial thing. No. you not only have to be excellent, you almost have to be extraordinarily excellent and around areas and themes that are really quite challenging. It seems to continue year on year, and there'll always be a bit of controversy, inevitably, but I think the positive outweighs the negatives in terms of what it achieves.
By far. Thank you so much. David, it's been a real pleasure. And I honestly thank you for your time today and for joining me. Your stories are really interesting and I love hearing your perspective.
Very, very kind of you to say. I've enjoyed it because it makes you think of things that you've done and people that you've met and experiences that you've had. And I think the other thing we all understand is being made to think's no bad thing.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
Really hope you enjoyed this episode of Leading for Business Excellence with David Callahan. Do join us again next month when we're going to be talking to Joanne Humble. Joanne is Global Head of Business Process Improvement at Catalent Pharma Solutions. She's going to be sharing with us her practical experience of making change happen, engaging people in the process of change, and developing sustainable programs. So please do subscribe via your usual podcast service to ensure you don't miss it. And of course, if you'd like to know more about how you can develop your career in business excellence and transform your organisation, please drop us a line, team@pmi.co.uk. We'd love to hear from you.